Right, everyone, welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Political and strategic isolation is what the U.S. achieved from the emergency session it had asked the IAEA Board of Governors to hold on Iran on Wednesday. Foreign Minister Zarif has cited Washington's attempts to win any support for its anti-Iran move as testament to this fact. In the first place, most member states in attendance questioned the U.S. request to deal with the issue at the Board of Governors, which they said had a different mandate. Now, Washington accused Iran of extortion and asked it to stop reducing its commitments based on the nuclear deal. Tehran argues that the U.S. has no reason to worry about violation of the deal that it abandoned 14 months ago. In tonight's debate, we'll discuss the failed U.S. anti-Iran attempt at the IAEA. Before that, let's ask Press TV's Homa Liski, was in Vienna, about the reactions to the U.S.'s IAEA move. Homa, over to you.
Yes, Behrouz, well, the session that was held yesterday here in Vienna was of significance because of how it turned out in the end. According to the Iranian ambassador, there was not even any formal outcome or conclusion to this meeting, and he said that while in regular IAEA Board of Governors meeting, at least the chair of the board makes a summarization of the remarks. Even this time, there was no conclusion in that sense, and there was no formal outcome or resolution, something that the United States was looking for as a means, he said, to put further pressure on Iran. We also heard that the Russian ambassador to the IAEA had made a very strong speech against what the United States had said. And I'm quoting here the Russian ambassador to the IAEA saying that the U.S. was practically isolated on the issue, and it was a, quote, oddity that the meeting had been called by the country that declared the JCPOA to be a terrible deal. In practice, the Russian ambassador said, it turns out that Washington is aware of the importance of the JCPOA. The fact is that as far as Iran is concerned, the suspensions of its parts of its activities based on the JCPOA is within its rights based on the text of the deal. It is not violating the deal. In fact, Iran says it wants to preserve the deal, and it's taking these measured and, you know, phased steps in order to give more chances and an opportunity for the European side to take the practical steps that need to be taken in order for Iran's economic benefits, you know, to be met. Because as long as Iran cannot export oil, as long as it cannot receive this financial relationship, this financial support from not just European governments but also private companies and entities, then it's not going to benefit at all from the JCPOA. There is no logical reason to stay in it, but it is doing its best to do so with the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that, Homa Liski, correspondent in Vienna. Now, time to start a discussion. And joining me from Answer Coalition, we'll have Richard Becker out of San Francisco, and also a lecturer of State University of New York, Carl Grossman, who's joining us from Sag Harbor, New York. Good to have both of you, gentlemen. Now, starting with Richard, Iran's top diplomat says that the United States tried to get other countries to condemn Tehran for what it claimed to be a violation of the JCPOA, but to no avail. Isn't this another foreign policy failure for Washington?
Yeah, and it's an amazing form of imperial arrogance where you have the United States government withdrawing unilaterally from the agreement 14 months ago, denouncing the agreement, and demanding that Iran adhere to the agreement. I mean, that really is something. And the fact that this is going on and it's getting the kind of coverage it is in the U.S. media, which is really awful coverage for the most part, also reflects the fact that the media here just really, in times of crisis, acts as a mouthpiece for the government.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carl, the United States walked away from the nuclear deal. It was not Iran. So why do you think that the U.S. Took the case to the IAEA? Well, it's the one that violated it. Can you dissect the U.S. rationale?
Well, I think our President Donald Trump and his now National Security Advisor Bolton are really they're seeking a confrontation, frankly, with Iran. But give me a couple of minutes. I have a different perspective on all this, and I'd just like to explain it. It's something I've spoken about, in fact, all over the world. I think what is needed is for the whole planet, the whole world, to be a nuclear-free zone. No nuclear weapons, no nuclear weapons, period, and no nuclear power, because any nuclear power plant provides the plutonium to build nuclear weapons. Now, some might say that's very unrealistic, but in fact, humanity has put the genie back in the bottle. That's a cliche after World War I. They realized that chemical warfare was unthinkable and horrible. And there was a number of treaties, the Chemical Weapons Convention of 1933, the Geneva Protocol of 1925. And ever since, mainly, not totally, there's not been the use of chemical weapons. In terms of nuclear, a war is unthinkable. And if Iran thinks it's a deterrence, it's not a deterrence. I mean, these people in power in my country would, well, as Trump said a few weeks ago, seek to obliterate Iran. I mean, but beyond that, as I say, as nuclear technology spreads throughout the planet, we're looking, I don't know if we can all make it, our grandchildren and their grandchildren through to the 21st century. There are parts of the planet that are nuclear-free zones, Africa, South America, the Pacific, and so forth. No nuclear weapons. I would add to that and say no nuclear power. Just give an example. In 1974, a reactor was provided to India by Canada, and the United States trained the personnel under our Atoms for Peace program, and lo and behold, India had the bomb. Then Pakistan had the bomb. What needs to be done, and I just wish Iran would do this, join in a move to abolish nuclear weapons. And just let me add, I'm not alone on this.
Yeah, that's
what
Iran has already done.
I'm on the board of an organization based in the United States called Beyond Nuclear, which also has a branch, Beyond Nuclear International, which works for the abolition of nuclear power and the abolition of nuclear weapons.
Yeah, Carl, a few years ago, President Rouhani of Iran offered the same thing at the UN General Assembly meeting. But the U.S. and Israel need to start it. I mean, your country, as you said, they have the largest arsenal of nuclear weapons. And Iran is using it for, you know, electricity needs, Iran needs that for electricity purposes anyway. Let's go to Richard. Mr. Trump has called the 2015 Iran nuclear deal the worst deal ever. Now, the question is, if the deal is what Trump is saying, why is the U.S. so worried about Iran's scale back?
Well, I think that it's clear that what the U.S. objective is regime change in Tehran. The United States government, the National Security Advisor, Bolton and Pompeo in particular, the Secretary of State, are very determined to bring this about. That's their intention. I don't think that they're going to succeed in doing it, but that is what their intention is. They know that Iran does not pose a threat of nuclear weapons. I mean, if Iran raises the percentage from 3.67 to 4.5% of its uranium, then you're talking, and the U.S. media and the White House talks about they're inching their way toward weapons grade. Weapons grade requires 90% enrichment. And it's like saying if you drive from Florida to Georgia, you're inching your way to the North Pole. It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
This is what the reality is. And the idea that that you hear from Washington, that Iran is carrying out provocations against the United States and against the world. All one has to do is look at a map of the U.S. military bases around Iran. Iran is virtually completely surrounded by U.S. military power and bases in Afghanistan, in Iraq, Bahrain, in the Gulf. There are Trident submarines. We're all in the Answer Coalition, all for getting rid of nuclear weapons, but it's got to start in Washington. There are Trident submarines, the most deadly weapon of war ever invented, ever created. That's sitting off the coast of Iran. This was released a few years ago when the U.S. military said that they could outfit instead of some of the 200 nuclear warheads independently targetable, they could outfit the Trident with some conventional warheads as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, thus confirming that indeed the Trident submarine, aircraft carriers, all kinds of weaponry is surrounding Iran. And Iran is really doesn't have anything like that outside of its own borders, not certainly surrounding the United States.
Right. Carl, Tehran is saying that Washington's withdrawal from the nuclear deal and also European signatories not fulfilling their commitments within the agreement. These are the two reasons that have caused Iran to scale down its obligations, and that is based on the JCPOA, Articles 26 and 36. So it's the U.S. that's to reverse course, not Iran, right?
Just let me, because viewers might not be familiar with what was just said, and it's very important. You need 90% enrichment, and enrichment means 90% uranium-235. Mm-hmm. That's the fissile component of uranium to have an atomic bomb. 4%, 5%, you can keep going up with it, doesn't make for an atomic bomb. However, what Iran, unfortunately, is doing is giving these Bolton and Trump an excuse to use force against Iran. And what I'm suggesting is that Iran should join with peace-loving countries all around the world in seeking to, like chemical weapons were outlawed, to seeking, period, to outlaw nuclear weapons of every country. I was for 20 years at the United Nations on a commission on disarmament education, conflict resolution, and peace. And we studied and got involved in seeking to resolve conflict and have peace created. And just a quick anecdote, one of the things we did was to bring together peoples from warring areas at a retreat in Pennsylvania, of all places, for a couple of weeks. And after they got to know each other, they were friends. And that's the key to conflict resolution, for people to negotiate, to work with other people, get to know them. However, in the United States today, we have a leadership. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, Trump is by far the worst president the United States has ever had, and he's surrounded by a band of scoundrels. And so when it comes to Iran, if it's 5% or 6% enrichment in 2 weeks or 6 weeks, again, it just gives these figures, these people who are at this point running the United States government, an excuse.
Mm-hmm. Now, Richard, let's look at it from a different aspect. Foreign Minister Zarif is saying that the U.S. is trying through its maximum pressure campaign to separate the Iranian nation from the government, but that will be futile. Now, is this fair game? I mean, sanctions affecting ordinary people's lives, trying to set them off against the government?
We believe that sanctions should be declared to be a war crime. The sanctions are used. The sanctions are not an alternative to war. Sanctions are war. I was in Iraq twice during the time of the sanctions, the blockade really of Iraq, and saw the incredibly terrible consequences of those sanctions, which probably killed over a million people, aside from all the bombing and the wars and the invasion, just the sanctions themselves. And the toll may have been higher. When I went to the hospitals in 1994 in Iraq, there were not even aspirin. There was not even aspirin for people who were dying of cancer. People didn't go to the hospitals that was 3.5 years into those sanctions anymore, because of the fact that there was no way of treating them. So they only went to die in the hospitals. And this went on for 13 years in regard to Iraq. We've seen the terrible consequences of the sanctions, the blockade of Cuba, the sanctions against Venezuela, and now the sanctions against Iran, which are clearly, and there are other countries as well, but clearly the sanctions against Iran are having a terrible impact, and we know this, we hear this from first-hand accounts, on the lives of the people. It's not the same as Iraq. because Iran is a much more developed country, but it's still a developing country. And cutting off its trade with the world is reminiscent of what happened in the period 1951 to 53 under the Mossadegh government, when Iran attempted to commit what was considered a terrible crime in Washington and New York, and that was to use the oil resources for the benefit of the people. The government was overthrown, and the repressive, the hyper-repressive regime of the Shah was put into place, and the U.S. companies made billions and billions of dollars in profits while the people suffered. That's the effect of sanctions. And I recall that in 1953, after the overthrow of the Mossadegh government, the New York Times trumpeted the idea, well, this will teach other countries not to engage in economic nationalism. Resource nationalism is the exact phrase that they used, meaning that using the resources of developing countries, of poor countries, of formerly colonized countries for the benefit of their own people was a crime against the interest of the imperialists.
Right. Now, Carla, unlike the U.S. claim, Iran has not violated the nuclear deal. You know, the country has acted exactly based on those articles I told you, 26 and 36. It allows the country to do what it is doing once the other parties fail to fulfill their commitments, and they have failed. So it's not the violation of the JCPOA that the U.S. is complaining about and wants the world to look into. What is it that Washington is seeking to achieve?
Well, the U.S. government ostensibly is fearful that Iran will develop nuclear weaponry and use it. I mean, that's the ostensible reason. Two points that I would like to make. One, in terms of undermining governments, that's nothing new in the United States. I mean, I've come down heavy right now on Trump because I think truly the worst president we've ever had in the United States. But the United States, particularly in the Western Hemisphere, has made an art of undermining, of toppling governments. I wrote a book called Nicaragua, America's New Vietnam, all about how, under Reagan now, the United States in the 1980s sought to overthrow the Sandinista government in Nicaragua. I went to Honduras, and I got onto an army base, which was set up, it was set up for an intervention. The only thing that stopped an intervention in another Vietnam for the U.S. was the Iran-Contra scandal. And just finally, just let me note, for those who are interested in what I'm talking about, a nuclear-free world, check out the website of Beyond Nuclear. Just go to beyondnuclear.org and read about, again, it's not just me, it's many people around the world who feel that the key to this nightmare that's inevitably going to be ahead as nuclear technology proliferates is nuclear war.
Mm-hmm. Richard, the United States in this meeting also called for direct talks with Iran, and that without any preconditions. Now, is this normal practice? Is this diplomatic overture to place sanctions on a country and pressure in different ways and try to force it to the negotiating table?
Well, I think so, and you have to take into account the fact that there was an agreement reached, the JCPOA, after a long, long process of negotiation and sanctions that really caused a lot of damage to Iran, and that agreement was finally reached, and then, you know, 3 years later, the agreement is abrogated unilaterally by the U.S. government, and then the U.S. government says, but Iran must continue to adhere to it. We demand that Iran adhere to the terms of the JCPOA, mm-hmm. and then says, and we will negotiate with Iran without preconditions. I mean, what are you to make of that? What is any logical person to make of that, except that this is, you know, the combination of the maximum pressure and the threat of war, the threat of exterminating Iran that comes from Washington, combined with we would like to negotiate without preconditions. I mean, it's very, very, I think it would be very, very hard for anyone who's on the other end of this kind of policy to take seriously and to believe that Washington really wants to have serious negotiations.
Okay, I appreciate your comments and perspective from the Answer Coalition. We had Richard Becker, who joined us out of San Francisco, and also the lecturer of State University of New York, Carl Grossman, who joined us from Sag Harbor, New York. Thank you for watching this program. We'll see you next time.